Hey, Lois, look at me, I'm podcasting on TPN.
Welcome to the inaugural edition of the Two Web Crew podcast. So named because it reminds me of Two Live Crew, a very bad hip-hop band from the 90s, and because it's the semi-official podcast of twoweb.com.au, a little site that you two good-for-nothings threw together in about 5 minutes by the look of the web design. Nick Kubrilovich and Benjamin Barron, my fellow Australian Web 2.0 muckabouts. How you doing, boys?
Good
Word
evening.
Up, Cam. Word up.
Word up, homie.
Good evening. Good.
We're down in the Two Web Crew, and we're going to hit it up hard tonight. So word up to all you 2.0 entrepreneurs and bloggers, posse.
I've got nothing to add to Ben's comments.
Now, Nick, to do a bit of an introduction, because I don't even know who the hell you guys are, let alone the people listening in. I don't know. I just ended up on this site with you guys. Let's start with Nick, because I know least about Nick. At least Ben and I have had a couple of beers. Nick, you're coming at us from where? Sydney?
From sunny Wollongong, just south of Sydney, which is a place that nobody outside of Wollongong has ever heard of. But I just happened to be born here. Probably to my disadvantage, but...
Most famous because there's a shark named after it. No, that's a wobbegong, so...
No, yeah, that's right. Yeah, most famous for not being known.
And, so, and you're the CEO of something called OmniDrive. What the hell is OmniDrive, Nick?
OmniDrive is online file storage with a lot of Web 2.0 features, which we'll be talking a lot about what that actually means. But it's basically online storage with technologies that are very current, very new, that allow people to store files online transparently without really thinking about it. So that's the sort of quick summary of it.
And you're not released yet, you're in alpha?
We're in a private beta at the moment. We have just over 1,000 users. We have just over 30,000 users in the beta queue, and we're going to be letting more and more people on every week between now and the end of April, where we're going to be launching into a public beta, which we're very excited about.
When do I get on, B-Hutch?
You'll be getting on in the next release, probably, which will be sometime this weekend, possibly later tonight or tomorrow.
Good, because if I'm not, I'll be editing you out of this podcast.
At OmniDrive.com.
And you, you're also a blogger for TechCrunch. How did you end up with that gig?
Well, I met Mike about 6 months ago online, and we just started talking, and you know, we share a lot of the same ideas and thoughts, and we're both radically sort of our thinking is the same in regards to Web 2.0. We're both very critical of a lot of what's going on out there at the moment. We're both entrepreneurs, so you know, we were just chatting, and then we started setting up operations out in California over a month ago, and you know, went out there and met Mike, and we just, you know, hit it off. And then the way that I started writing for TechCrunch was that I was staying at his place while I was out there, and Mike needed to get away for a week, and he didn't know what to do with his blog. So he asked me if I would sort of guest blog for him, and it started there, and now it's gone into a more permanent position where, you know, I'll be contributing probably not as frequently as what Mike does, but still, you know, I'll be there now and sort of putting a different spin on things and looking more in the business Web 2.0 space, as well as putting some more Australian companies on the map out there in the valley as well. So it's been really exciting. It's a lot of hard work as well, which some people might not appreciate just reading the blog, but Mike's constantly flat out with people pitching to him and coming over and demoing their new gear. So, you know, TechCrunch is pretty much the epicenter of Web 2.0, and it's great to be in the midst of it and now contributing to it as well.
Yeah, good on you. Benjamin Barron, how you doing, Benji?
Yeah, that's what my parents call me.
When you're in trouble, Benjamin.
I'm good, mate. Yourself?
Yeah, I'm good, Benny. Now, your little startup that you're running has had about 15 names in the last 6 months. What's it called now?
Well, we have about four companies and about three different trusts. So the names haven't actually changed. This is a lot of different legal entities. But basically, Feed Corp Proprietary Limited is our sort of enterprise web 2.0 / RSS business, which is doing what I call web 2.0 productions. It's sort of the Miramax of, you know, or Fox Searchlight of web 2.0 in Australia. So we deal with, you know, whether it's media companies or telcos or any large company with resource that really wants to get into web 2.0. That's Feed Corp, and that's what Corleone is very much you know, involved in. And then there's news or GNOS or however you want to spell it, gnoos.com.au, which is starting off with Aussie Blog Search, launching our beta or whatever you want to call it in April, finally. I think it was supposed to launch September the 15th, so we're going to launch in April with about 40% of the features that we were supposed to have in September the 15th. So, but other than that, but you know what? It's actually looking pretty good from here. So hey, it's taken this long. We may as well go the last mile as well. So yeah, that's what I'm doing.
So what I like most about those two stories that you guys have told me is that I am the least known of the three of us. But I'm the only one actually running a real business. I'm the only one that actually has a website with anything on it, and yet no one's ever heard of me, but you two guys are famous. So there you go.
I think the opposite of what you just said is true, because you do a shitload more. You probably do 20 times more traffic than Nick and I combined. I mean, you're in the top four Australian bloggers, and hey, we're doing decent revenue on a monthly basis, but I don't know how many ads are up on the podcast network at the moment.
You're doing revenue?
Absolutely.
Oh, right. Oh shit. Well,
it's an amazing concept, isn't it?
I bow down before you, man. You got revenue. No website.
Our business model is not based on Google ads, I'll tell you that. It connects enterprise and companies and equals revenue. You know, good revenue. Enough to pay for a few programmers a month anyway.
Fantastic. He's really blackmailing people, but you know, he won't tell you that story.
Well, that's, you know.
So now, I was thinking that the Two Web Crew podcast would sort of be like Gilmore Gang, but without the pretension,
or the dementia,
or the boring.
It's not 85-year-olds sort of discussing whether Microsoft Office in the government market is going to be cannibalised by G Office.
So what do you guys want to do with this show? I mean, I know we had a little bit of an email thread about it earlier today, but I think that just sort of what I'm most interested in is just having a yarn with you guys about what's going on in this space and trying to capture some of the delightful stories that have been going on in the Two Web private mailing list over the course of the last week. It's been a hoot.
Yeah, I think we should start with the bet, basically, or I'll preface it slightly. The definition of Two Web Crew, I think, that we'll all basically agree to is that none of us have a lot of ka-ching cash, you know, six or seven figures on a monthly basis going into our bank accounts. Why? Because we blog and we run Web 2 businesses in Australia. So on that criteria, there's about eight of us, I think, in total in the country that we could find. you know, like already all the venture capitalists and people in media companies and corporate strategists and want to get into Two Web, but they want to keep their salary and their lifestyle and their ka-ching. You can't have both. It's a bloody, after a lot of years in corporate strategy stuff, there's a big difference between your own business and someone else's. And then you've got people that do run their own businesses but wouldn't know how to separate Microsoft Word from, you know, from WordPress. So I think that's where 2Web started. And just thank God, Nick coming back from America, I don't think he's got over his jet lag. So he just like, at 2 o'clock in the morning, he wants to do a podcast or code something or pass OPML or RSS. And yeah, that's what he does. So I was looking at INA.com.au, checking out some domain names. I said, I don't want to have like web20workgroup.com. Should we call it a group, a club, a network? Should we have 2.0 or 2.0 in the domain? And, yeah, so 2web.com.au was born, and Nick's like, I'll bang an email out now. It's like, can you edit it? It's 4 a.m. And I didn't even get to edit it. He just banged it out anyway. And it's, you know, it's beautiful.
Well, yeah. One of the things that I do like about that story is it rings true because I think the day after the email came out, it was about 3 a.m. one morning, and I'm sitting here working in my study, and Nick pops up on Skype. Actually, no, we started doing an email discussion, and then one of us pinged the other one on Skype. I can't remember which. And yeah. So from about 3 a.m. to 5 a.m., Nick and I are chatting away on Skype about what's going on and talking about, you know, who's talking to which investment bankers and, you know, and CPM rates for podcasting. And we were just laughing about the fact that, as you say, you got all these guys that are working their little safe corporate jobs, as we all were once upon a time, and now we're working 24/7 trying to get these things off the ground. But I wouldn't trade it for quids. What about you guys?
No way. I never look back. I enjoy this more and more every day. And the biggest difference is that I no longer distinguish work and home. It's just all one big blur, and I'm loving every minute of it. I mean, you can't call this work. This isn't work. This is just, you know, doing what you really love doing, and hopefully making a lot of, or not a lot, but some money out of it so that you can support yourself. And I think we're in a fantastic situation that we can do what we do. And, you know, just a comment on how this all came about. I mean, that's the way that you got to do these things. It's in the spirit of the web is, you know, two guys having a 3 a.m. in the morning chat, coding up a website in half an hour and bringing together 8 great people, and you know, everything just sort of fled from there. And I'm sure, you know, the start that we've had, if we sort of project that out, I mean, this is just the beginning of the possibilities. And it was always bound to happen. You know, we were all sort of separately working on our own little things. And it was funny, we were all talking back to people in the USA and never sort of realizing that here in Australia there are people just down the road, you know, in an internet sense that we share the same geography, the same sort of backgrounds and so forth. So it only really made sense for us to sort of come together under some sort of banner and sort of aggregate all the knowledge that we have and not be as lonely anymore and you know, have somebody to talk to and so forth. So, yeah, it's a bit of a sob story, but the way that it came...
Especially yeah. Wollongong. Yeah, I mean, Ben and I catch up regularly. And, Darren Rouse and I hung out for 3 days in Coolum about 2 weeks ago. But
yeah, okay, yeah, but yeah, that's Melbourne, which is, yeah, okay. I wouldn't be moving down there, but...
Speaking of Darren... he had pretty much a full-page spread in page 3 of the Sydney Morning Herald yesterday.
What a photo.
It's a great, great photo. And if people haven't seen the story, go up to Darren's problogger.net website. Darren's also a member of 2Web, one of the founding principals of B5 Media, the blogging network. But I love the photo that Darren's put up in his blog. Have you seen that?
Yes, it was interesting.
I love it. But that was a big thing. Now, Tom Burton from the Sydney Morning Herald was down here last week, I think, or the week before, I can't remember, and spent, earlier this week, and spent a couple of hours with Darren and a couple of hours with myself and I don't know who else. But, of course, I didn't get a mention in the story. But
Where's your photo?
Oh, I don't know. I've got one here from the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age about a year ago. I had a full-page spread. But it's great to see that kind of press coming out in old media of new media. What I want to do, though, is get you guys to describe Web 2.0. There's been a lot of bullshit going around over the last 4 or 5 months. Web 2.0, it's hype, it's this, it's bullshit. You know, I was listening to you and Spence, one of my guys, interviewing Jason Calacanis over at Barcamp just recently, and Calacanis was talking of Web 2, but he was being a little bit disparaging about the whole Web 2.0 thing. Give me your pitch on Web 2.0, starting with you, Nick, seeing as TechCrunch is at the epicenter of Web 2.0. What does it mean? What does Web 2.0 mean?
Well, I'd like to say first, you know, it's very simple for Calacanis to write it off, but the guy, you know, he's made his tens of millions of dollars off of the hype, so I guess he can say what he wants now. But, you know, Web 2.0 is just a term to describe what the web is going through now. I mean, we had the dot-com era, we had the dot-bomb or the nuclear winter of the internet, and Web 2.0 is a relatively new term used to describe the sort of renaissance of the web that's happening now, and it, you know, it sort of involves a few parts to it. The first part is the emergence of some new technologies that allow web applications to behave and to act and sort of have the power of what desktop applications traditionally would. You know, it's commonly referred to as Ajax. So you've got applications now such as Gmail and so forth, which, you know, we can actually almost live on the web and exclusively use web applications. The second part to Web 2.0 is interoperability between applications, and that means that, you know, open standards so that applications and other applications can talk to each other a bit better. See, with Web 1.0, the old web, it was about, you know, building websites where everything was underneath the sort of Yahoo banner and everything that was created was coming out of a corporation, whereas now with Web 2.0 technologies and open standards and open APIs, it's about, you know, taking these services and mashing them together, which is where the concept of a mashup comes from, and creating something else. So Web 1.0 was about, you know, making the web easier for humans to understand, and Web 2.0 is about making the web easy for other applications to understand so that they can talk to each other now and they're all speaking the same language.
Okay, let me stop you there. For people who don't know what Ajax is, let's say there's some people listening in who don't give a shit about the technology. Can you give us a simple description of what Ajax means, what Ajax is all about?
Yeah, what Ajax is about, it stands for Asynchronous JavaScript and XML. It just means that, you know, your standard web browser can now, and the standard web page can now do a lot more than just sort of be a brochure on the web, and that means there's a lot more interactivity involved. And we've seen the sort of recently some of the cooler Ajax applications have been things like online word processors and some of the new webmail applications, you know, that act and behave just like Outlook would or any other desktop app. And what that means with that sort of new technology is that, you know, we can take a concept or an idea like a webmail client and implement it on the web in such a way that you don't miss any of the functionality that you normally do on the desktop. Such as, you know, if you remember Hotmail back in the day, you weren't able to drag and drop, you weren't able to do anything. It was basically just, you know, page after page of the server giving you back information. And what it is now is you've actually got an application running inside your web browser where you can right click, drag and drop. You've got a lot more rich functionality. So that's the sort of summary of Ajax. And it's developing further and further and all the time, and more cool stuff is coming out. And, you know, we're only seeing the beginning of what's going to be possible in the web browser in the future. And, you know, that's what's really been pushing the whole Web 2.0 thing, is that now, you know, as I mentioned, you can, because of the power of these web applications, you can live exclusively on the web, do your word processing on the web, your spreadsheets on the web, your email on the web, and everything else. I think, you know, probably the only thing that I rely on my desktop for right now, it's possibly Microsoft Excel for spreadsheets and Photoshop to edit photos, and it probably won't be too long away till we have web-based replacements for those as well. So that's a sort of summary of what Ajax is. Ben, if you want to add anything else to that?
No, it's a buzzword, yep. No, it's good.
It is a buzzword, you know, but yeah, it describes,
it's Gmail.
It describes a group of technologies. So,
and would you say it's true to say that there are a group of technologies that's enabling a richer end user experience for browser-based applications?
Browser-based services? That's exactly what it is. And, you know, we can basically do anything now within a web browser, and, you know, the limitations of what can be done are just a lot higher than what they were before.
Okay, so Ben, let's get back to the definition of Web 2.0. Now, Nick's described it as sort of the resurgence of the web after the dot-bomb, the dot-crash. We've talked about Ajax as a programming technologies and methodology and end user experience vision for applications inside of the browser. What else is happening out there from a Web 2.0 perspective? What other things are encapsulated in this idea of the new web?
Well, I mean, Nick's definition was perfect. You could just create a transcription of that and put it on Wikipedia, and basically what he said defines Web 2.0. The only thing that I would add, just to really take another perspective on it, is sort of, I guess, the entrepreneurial story turned into the mainstream story is obviously, I hate saying it, but the Google story, the Jamaya story that we've talked about this on before. But basically, you know, I don't know, because 2001, 2002, geez, it really sucked to work in this business, you know. Now I'm 31 and I'm dealing with people that are like 22, 23, 24. And, you know, I think, what do they call me? A net veteran, you know, not that I've cashed out like someone like Calacanis. I had my stock options and they didn't go anywhere. But that Calacanis podcast on TPM, which was fantastic also, where he really emphasizes revenue and earnings, but he tells the story of like how a Silicon Valley reporter or whatever the version he had, it went from just, you know, having 70 staff to having to sack 50 staff, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, at the same time, 2002, heaps more people coming on the internet because that doesn't change. Broadband, wireless, et cetera. You know, Google comes along, goes back to your classic white background, search becomes easy, search becomes attractive. In 2002, 2001, search sucked. You know, now Google's, you know, $120 billion, et cetera. And so, but what I think is really interesting around the 2002-03 or whenever it really happened period is that these little companies, like, well, they weren't even companies, they were just like side projects, like Joshua, who Nick knows at Delicious, or, you know, Katarina and Stuart at Flickr, who were doing some sort of game project, the movable type six apart people, all these sort of 37 or signals, etc. All these people started these sort of little projects in blogging, yourself, Cameron, in podcasting, in search, and they use some of these technologies. But I think when they started these things, no one ever wanted to say that this is a really huge business and I'm going to IPO it. I'm into this. They were sort of organically growing things using web-based stuff because that's what people wanted for themselves. And so what we had then is Google becoming huge public company and starting to do these little acquisitions. I mean, probably started with Blogger, if not before, you know, buying Blogger off Evan Williams. And since then, there's been a whole stack of acquisitions in this sort of 25 to 50 million space. And this is the whole built to flop mentality, like right away last week where Google bought the online word processor. And so people are buying companies to fill portfolio gaps, as they're called. And so next week someone, you know, the spreadsheets online, no one's got a really good PowerPoint killer online, although I think Nick might have reviewed one last week, et cetera, et cetera. Now, none of these really penetrate the enterprise market like a Salesforce.com and CRM, which Nick's also blogging about in TechCrunch. But I guess overall, Web 2, I mean, I totally agree. Web 2 is what came after, you know, Web 1, basically. But it's a very interesting time, as all of us, are, you know, obviously by quitting our jobs and et cetera, et cetera. But the Google and the embryonic startup thing's quite interesting.
The one thing that you sort of touched on there, which I believe is a big part of Web 2.0 as well, is just how easy it has become for somebody to create a business. And more often than not, it inadvertently happens that a business is created around some project that somebody just thought would be cool to do. You know, as an example, today on TechCrunch, Mike reviewed a company called Zuma, which is an sort of online photo storage and sharing product, and it was written by a guy called Christopher Tate, who's based down in the Valley, but he's 17 years old, and he wrote this in 3 months. I mean, it's just amazing what he's come up with, and you know, his effort over the last 3 months, combined with the attention that he's getting, such as the TechCrunch review, you know, will result in him actually having a business tomorrow. You know, the chances are that he'll have 10, 20,000 users this week. And from there, you know, who knows what can happen. So, you know, he's inadvertently built a business now just because of a little project that he thought would be cool to work on.
Yeah, I think the idea of starting these things as a hobby and running them as a real business is something that interests me a lot. You know, when we started TPN just a bit over a year ago, in the first couple of months, Well, I mean, let me go back a step. TPN really started just as a hobby. You know, there was Mick and I had nothing much to do, and we thought, hey, this podcasting thing's like fun. Let's do a bunch of podcasts and just
it might take off.
Well, you know, quite honestly, it wasn't even really a might take off. I mean, it was like, let's just cause some trouble. And before we knew it, causing trouble turned into a lot of fun. And it was only after we'd been doing it for a little while that the idea of, hey, this could be a business started to emerge. But the advice I had from everybody early on, you know, mentors, people that had been through .com 1 or Web 1.0, let's call it that, were, you know, people that I trust and respect were, well, man, you got to raise lots of money and float it. The goal should be to float it in the next 12 to 18 months and you need to get VC and giving me what was, you know, probably very good advice. But, you know, my ambition with this was never, hey, let's build it, flip it, make some quick green, you know, and buy an Escalade. It was to build something and have fun. And who's not paying attention? Baron?
Hello? I think that's Ben's talking to somebody in the background.
Pay attention when I'm talking, Baron, or you'll get disconnected.
So my dad wanted a mosquito repellent. The whole world down knows that.
But let me get back. So it was doing it for fun. It was doing it for, you know, the enjoyment of getting involved in some of these new things. With your respective businesses, what's the kind of vision over the next 2 to 5 years? Are you building this thing for an IPO? Are you building it to, you know, flip it to Jemiah? Are you building it? You know, what's the vision for you guys? Are you building it to run it for 20 years? Where are you coming from?
Well, originally OmniDrive started as a side. It wasn't really a side project, but it was more of a research project into having more scalable storage that, you know, we could then sell to businesses and turn into a sort of consumer product that we have now with all these Web 2.0 features like feeds and so forth. And it was only actually very recently, probably back in December or so, that I came to the realization that there's actually a real business, not just a real business, but potentially a huge business. You know, previously I'd looked at some research of other contenders who would try to attack the market, and based off of that research, we developed the product that we have now. But this OmniDrive is definitely a big swing, high risk, try and go for it all, become standard sort of online storage. And the reason that I approached it like that is that, you know, I had done a number of projects before and, you know, it was time that I decided that, you know, I'm going to dedicate a couple of years of my life to this unpaid and so forth, get through it self-funded, just so that we can have a really big swing at it. And so it's not in the sense of, you know, 99% of other Web 2.0 companies, we're actually planning to build a big business around the technology that we've developed.
What about you, Ben? What's the vision for Noose or Feed Corp? Is it a flip strategy?
Oh, no, I mean, absolutely not. I mean, unfortunately, I spent too many years at university and I've read too many books and seen too many failures. And any company that is just built to flop, as I say, is absolutely the wrong way of going about business. I mean, like we're talking about, I mean, there's a lot of commonality in all our stories, really. Sometimes the execution and the sector is slightly different. I mean, you know, like say recently, we've only just in the last, 2 months started earning revenue. So I've just only started earning money again after, you know, having a six-figure salary for basically the last decade. And I can't tell the difference between what is work and what isn't, you know, because like Nick said, it's just it's an all-consuming passion. Well, at the end of 2004, I was earning a lot of money working on a lot of projects and absolutely hating them, working on a social networking startup, working on a business networking startup, working on census search, working on afl.com.au, working on all these things. And basically, I had a problem with my knee. I sort of had to be out of the game, as they say, for 6 months, and that's when I bought the you know, bought the Apple computers and really had a look at everything and just sort of got back into it accidentally. And it wasn't about business. That's why I just blogged for a year for no money, for no business. And, but then sort of, you know, Corleone came down. He's about the only person that found where I was hiding out down the peninsula. And this whole RSS thing, I said, this is like the second internet. I mean, I worked at Microsoft like Cameron, and I remember in 1997 when we were doing IE4 and the active desktop and all this sort of, you know, push content and pointcast days, you know. Heck, you know, Information Superhighway, Time Warner, 93, 94. So this is sort of the first time I've been the entrepreneur running my own business, and this is my own sort of signature. If I screw this up, I'll be quite happy to go back to the sort of well-paid VC analyst corporate portal hall. But I'm really, you know, I'm really loving this. I see a real gap in what they're saying. Well, for one, I'm also like, I'm not a, when Nick says high risk, big swing, global, I'm a bit more like, I'd rather take big market share in smaller marketplace. Google did 39% of their revenue outside of America last year, up from 34% in 2004. And to be perfectly honest, in Australia, there hasn't been any good websites launched since about 99. So first and foremost, in the next sort of 3 or 4 months, I just want to launch some websites that people like you guys, myself and other people go, that's just a kick-ass website and I use it every day. And then from that, that's on the consumer side. On the enterprise side, like I said, I'm all for working with people that reach 10 million Australians a week and having creative control over a project and seeing if we can launch some cool shit. So I'm miles away from figuring out stuff for like exits, etc., because I know if I don't launch a good website in April and then one for a partner in sort of May, June, that I will be back in that sort of corporate six-figure hell.
Well, this is also, you know, one of the reasons that TwoWeb came together is because I don't believe that anywhere near enough entrepreneurship happens in Australia as what should happen. There isn't the entrepreneurial spirit here as much as what there is in the US and other countries. There aren't enough people taking the risks, which is the only way that innovation can happen. It seems that most people down here are very complacent with their sort of small businesses that sort of churn over every year, or very complacent with their decent paying jobs, and you know, they don't see an incentive to step out and do things on their own. Part of the reason is because they don't hear enough good stories about people who have done that previously. And what we're hoping to do with TwoWeb is not only introduce people in Australia and the media and the government to Web 2.0, but also hopefully, you know, encourage some people to take the step up, the same as what we've done. Come and, you know, meet us and learn from everything that's happened up until now, and hopefully start something great. Because, you know, I definitely don't believe that enough startups start in Australia, especially, you know, new entrepreneurs coming out. There's just not enough incentive at the moment, and, you know, not enough of a community at the moment.
You know, a few months ago, it was probably late last year, I was at an event being run by Rachel Slattery in Melbourne that was called Fast Forward Rewind or something like that. And basically it was sort of a half-day thing. They got together a bunch of the Web 1.0 entrepreneurs from Australia, threw them on a panel, and everyone was sort of talking about Web 1.0, what happened, why it crashed, what happened to the companies after it crashed, and just sort of doing a bit of a post-mortem, and then talking about what's happening now. And to be honest, a lot of the guys were sort of pretty old farts, and, you know...
There wasn't a guy from Web Wombat, was there?
I'm not mentioning any names.
I had a meeting once with a guy from Web Wombat, and he just, like, fell asleep in the meeting, and I'm like, dude, you are not the person to run a search engine. Anyway, keep going.
And the interesting thing for me was that a lot of the when the guys were talking about what they were doing now and talking about what was going to be big over the next 5 years, they were boring, man. They were talking about security and, you know, rolling out Wi-Fi infrastructure and nothing that got me as a user excited in the slightest. You know, I was waiting for people to talk about you know, new media or talk about Ajax and, you know, nobody mentioned blogging. I think, actually, I lie. I think one guy mentioned the word blog once in the whole half-day session. Nobody mentioned podcasting. nobody mentioned Ajax. Nobody mentioned delivering services online, any of that kind of stuff.
But yes, yeah, that's the reason why a lot of their Web 1.0 businesses failed as well, I guess, because at the same time while they were starting those businesses, the same businesses were failing elsewhere because they just weren't keeping up.
Now, what do you guys think about the bubble? There's been a lot of talk in the sort of geek circles in the last couple of months about there's a bubble going on at the moment. Is it a bubble? I think on the interview, Calacana said that it's definitely frothy out there at the moment. It's not a bubble, but it's very frothy.
I think the really basic stuff is, oh yeah, it's just, it's an absolutely huge bubble and it's all going to explode and everyone better cash out really quickly and move on to another industry, you know, blah, blah, blah. I mean, there's really simple stuff that, again, you know, like the venture capital rounds have been small, not lots of people in the same sector have been funded compared to the last time. You've got to do 75 to 100 million in revenue if you want to IPO, so you can't. You can only IPO on the small cap London market or, you know, et cetera. So there's nothing like the investment bankers have to disclose and they can't take kickbacks and blah, 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 blah. So basically there isn't the same sort of, you know, do a Super Bowl ad, IPO, kickback, et cetera, et cetera.
There have been no IPOs. The acquisitions have all been quite low. Funding is increasing, but it's just increasing from the biggest slump VCs have ever had and gone back up to sort of what you'd call average levels. I think the bubble talk is more because there was such a down period that any sort of upswing, you know, is greatly appreciated and so forth. But, you know, they're comparing it to, you know, the dot-com winter. I think we've gone back up to normal now. There's a lot of innovation happening, which is good.
I think also there's a bit of the, like Nick said, low barriers to entry. So honestly, there's a million and one companies with no business model who think a business model in year two is to put some Google ads on, etc. So there is an excess of new companies that lack focus, but I mean that's no different to the amount of nightclubs or restaurants that start. So.
You know, a lot of people pointed to the MySpace acquisition as signs of a bubble because of the fact that Fox paid $570 million for what was a social network. But it's got 55 million users. It's the second most trafficked website on the internet. Now, if that's not worth $570 million, then what's it? If any, you know, that was probably the acquisition bargain of the year last year, you know, while they were being laughed at. Fox actually did have the foresight. And if we have a look at some of the other acquisitions that we've talked about, it's good that there's a lot of market activity at the moment, but the prices that are being paid in the acquisition market aren't anywhere near what, you know, the prices were back in the late 90s. I mean, there's no Netscape of Web 2.0.
Skype.
Well, yeah, even, you know, Skype, that's, that was eBay buying on the back of, you know, very large user base, and eBay just needing to put some money to work.
Oh, I agree with you. I agree with your point totally. I mean, Skype's the outlier, and MySpace is higher than most. Like, most acquisitions aren't over 50 million. One of the things I'm getting interested in, RE2Web, and to be honest, RE, our strategy long term, is there's been a lot of Australian acquisitions, especially by Fairfax and by News Limited as well, in the sort of 12 to 15 million Australian, which is about 10 million US. Now, I don't know the exact numbers, but America's got something like 20 times the internet users, and their acquisitions are only sort of two or three times higher on average. I think one of the interesting nuances, even within TubeWeb, is going to be businesses that have a global focus and businesses that have a local focus. Because, like Nick said, high risk, high return. I would say my strategy is more low to moderate risk, low to moderate return. So, yeah, I think that's an interesting thing too. Like TPN, it's very strong in Australia. It's global as well, but then podcasting globally, heck, you know, hell of a lot more competition as well.
Yeah.
Even locally, Austereo Triple J in that stupid article the other day. So, yeah, and I mean, in Nick's case, go and meet I don't know if I can say that. And then bloody G Drive Google comes out the next week. So he's gone and told the bloody investors who invested in Google all about his bloody plans. And, you know, yeah, sign an NDA. VCs don't sign NDAs, according to Kawasaki and Feld. Do they sign an NDA, Nick?
No, they don't sign NDAs. But we're going to cut that bit out as well. It's a bit sensitive.
Oh, is it? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Australian editing on that one, Cam. Australian edit, mate.
You'll have to get your lawyers to talk to his lawyers about that, Nick. I don't edit.
the one part of Web 2.0 that we haven't really touched on is, you know, what we're doing right now with podcasting and new media and, you know, what that means and how that's changing communications and media. And a lot of these acquisitions, I believe, from the media companies here are out of fear that they're going to be losing their dominance that they've enjoyed for so long, you know, thank you to regulation and so forth, just how the old media worked. And, you know, it's because of the way that new media spreads on the web that, you know, you can be local and focus local, but being international is as easier now than what it was before. You know, TechCrunch has a totally global audience and, you know, the podcast network, anybody can listen to anywhere around the world. It means that, you know, three guys can hook up a Skype conversation, have it published out on the web, and probably get more listeners than what some of the local radio shows do, more coverage. You know, it might be a bit early to say, but, you know, it's the leveling of the playing field there, which means, you know, marketing's a lot easier. Cost of customer acquisition using these new media networks such as blogs and podcasts and so forth is just almost zero. It's all based on buzz. So, you know, that's another aspect of Web 2.0 is the users now have the power to attain their own audiences, be it with audio, which is podcasting, you know, just written word, which is blogs, or video. You know, we've seen a couple of video blogs just pop up out of nowhere like Rocket Boom. And, you know, companies are paying $40,000 sponsorship places to be on Rocket Boom, which, you know, nobody had heard of 2-3 months ago. You know, to do something like that 10 years ago was just impossible. You'd be pitching a TV show idea to some executive in some TV station, whereas now, you know, you just set up a server, grab a video camera, and if your stuff's any good, you've got an audience a couple of weeks later. So, you know, I think that's, you know, another point of Web 2.0 that we, you know, should talk about a bit more is, you know, what's this new power that users now have of reaching audiences using all this new technology.
Nick, sorry, just quickly, it's 2.0. Yeah, 2.0, not Web 2.0. Anyway, sorry, Cam, what were you going to say?
Look, I often feel uncomfortable when people include podcasting and blogging in the Web 2.0 thing because, I mean, to me, Web 2.0, when it's commonly used, is about, you know, these sites that are leveraging Ajax technologies to deliver the service, which we're not really. I mean, blogging and podcasting really aren't about interactive applications. But,
RSS. Podcasting's RSS.
We scrape in on the RSS byline. But, you know, the whole new media space, you know, I guess, is leveraging a lot of the technological advancements that have been made in the last 5 years since Web 1.0, broadband at realistic pricing for many people around the world, the proliferation of portable MP3 players, thank you, Apple, and, you know, the whole mobile phone explosion that is really going to occur over the next 3 or 4 years as they become media players. Wi-Fi, you know, better processing power on our PCs, which will enable us to or edit these sorts of audio shows and produce video shows, you know, the technology that's been just going ballistic in digital cameras and mini DV cameras and all that kind of stuff. But listen, I want to get on to the final bit, and that'll probably bring us up to the end of the show. In our internal mailing list this week, Ben, you were talking about Web 2.0's dirty little secret. Want to explain to people what the dirty little secret is when we're talking about, you know, the sizes of audiences and customer acquisition?
Oh, well, Nick is in his celebrated role as the enterprise analyst for TechCrunch in the spare bedroom while he's in Atherton. We probably know more about it than me, but I mean, there's been, even me just reading all the crap that I read, basically there's the early San Fran social adopters, as they call them, you know, 250,000, 300,000 of them. The dirty little secret is that they're all just, there's this group of people that are all using all these different services. And so sometimes, like YouTube's a good example of this at the moment. YouTube's probably broken through that early adopter market. You know, their use of illegal video clips and then people like NBC suing them, but then other people doing deals with YouTube, but basically YouTube's on a stratospheric growth, which is also tied a bit to MySpace, etc., which Nick knows. But yes, the deal of secrets is basically how big is the potential market for some of these services, and some of them, like Delicious to me, I love Delicious, as everyone knows, but really the argument is something like Dig took it to a much more mainstream market because Delicious was just a bit too esoteric. But, yeah, Nick, you probably also know some more about some of the stats about usage, et cetera.
Yeah, well, you know, what we're talking about is Web 2.0 as a community is not very big. Therefore, what we consider to be big services, when you look at it from the outside, they aren't big in the broader sense. This is because it's all very cutting edge. So the sort of estimates in terms of the early adopter Web 2.0 community are, you know, 250 to 300,000 users. And, you know, I guess the dirty little secret is that it's not as big as what, you know, we sort of think it is at times. You know, some of the guys who are big in Web 2.0 are actual celebrities, but, you know, outside of our world that we live in, nobody's heard of these guys. Nobody knows what they're working on.
A good example, example, I think, was Flickr. I think it got bought with, say, 300,000 users, not sure exactly. It's now got 2 million users, and again, I think this was reported on TechCrunch. Yahoo Photos has 32 million users. Well, Flickr has 2 million, but when it was bought, it had 300,000. So to
bridge the gap, it still required, like, a big web brand to really sort of expand that growth. But it did take up the whole early adopter community very quickly.
So why do you think the numbers are so low? What? How can there possibly be only 250 to 300,000 people that are getting involved in these sorts of services earlier on? Is that the global population of people who give a shit about this? There are supposedly 30 million.
Yeah, because it's the very cutting edge. It's like, you know, how many people buy, you know, the latest high definition television sets and so forth and try them out and sort of tinker with them?
Well, no, wait. But these are things that don't cost you $10,000. I mean, there are supposedly 30 million blogs. How many people reading blogs? These things spread initially via word of blog. I'm absolutely flabbergasted that only 250,000 of these people actually go, yeah, Flickr, that looks like fun. I might try this shit out.
But, yeah, yeah. Like you run a, like, say, you, when you work day in, day out in a portal, stuff like doesn't surprise you at all. Like, most people don't get past a homepage. Most people go to a homepage and they don't click on anything other than the absolute prime usage thing. Like, people go to Google and they put in the word Google into the bloody, you know, into the keyword box. So yeah, when you talk about stuff like tagging, what does your wife or kids or my parents or friends know about tagging? Do they use tagging?
Shut up for a second. I'm not talking about, you know, the great unwashed here. I understand the great unwashed don't understand anything. I mean, my wife doesn't even read blogs apart from my own.
Well, there you go.
Which I kind of wish she'd stop reading mine. But, you know, I wouldn't have to filter it as much. But I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the geeks. I'm talking about the fact that, you know, Calicardus reckons he's got blogs of his that have a million readers. He on the show, he's talking about Engadget. Engadget's got a million readers.
Those
million readers of Engadget wouldn't go to a new Flickr type service that was getting a lot of hype on Engadget.
Correct. You see, this is the cutting edge, and Engadget is one of a number of services that have sort of bridged this community that we've talked about and flowed into the mainstream. So it's just like anything else, you've got the early adopters and the good services make it through the early adopter community and breach out into the mainstream. Engadget is one. Flickr is another. They bridged out after they got bought out by Yahoo. All these services need to go through these growth phases. It's just that, the three of us and the people that the community that we're in, we're at the extremely early stages of this. I mean, TechCrunch reviews companies months before they even go to public. And we're talking about technologies that are going to happen in a year's time, a 2 years' time, whereas in Australia, and the whole point of 2Web, is that, Web 2.0 is not even here yet. We're talking about being 3, 4, 5 years behind. So I think chances are that in, 2010, Australians will be able to read the archives of TechCrunch and actually understand what the hell we were talking about in 2006.
The thing that scared me most about that email post, it's funny, because I took the day off yesterday and I was out in the city, as you know, Ben, getting called to by girls in the street. That was hilarious. For people who haven't read my blog, I've got to tell the story because it was an absolute hoot. It's like 5 o'clock in the afternoon, 6 o'clock in the evening, something like that in Melbourne. My wife and I are walking through Federation Square, one of the sort of the main centre of Melbourne.
Cameron!
I hear this female voice, Cameron! And I'm looking around and I'm looking at some restaurants with outdoor decking tables, and can't see anyone I know, so I turn away and I hear this, Cameron! I turn back. And there's this table of young 20-something blonde girls, and I'm looking at them like giving them a "Are you talking to me? Are you talking to me?" And she goes, "Cameron, TPN." And I'm like,
"And you're not a celebrity." You see, okay, so TPN's bridged out of it. Early adopter community as well.
Let me finish the story. And I give her this look like, "What the?" She goes, "Doc Martin." She wasn't American. She says, "Doc Martin." Now, about a week ago, one of my hosts, Doc Martin Fluker, who hosts our travel show, he's a lecturer on travel and tourism at Victoria University, and he invited me to come and talk to his class on tourism about podcasting because he's actually set them a prac assignment this year. They all have to produce a tourism podcast. Great breeding ground for me. So I did an hour-long lecture to about 100 students. These were obviously some of his students. So it was the first time I'd ever been recognized in public for anything TPN related. I had to spend about an hour then explaining to my wife who these young girls were.
Calling out to you. It sounds like that you're slowly bridging the early adopter gap as well.
I wish. But that's what I was going to say. So I was reading your that mail thread on my XDA while I was out and about yesterday, and the thing that scared me the most is TPN's almost up to 250,000-300,000 customers or listeners each month. So I was thinking, shit, is that it? Is it over for us? Do we have to sell now? Do I have to sell so I can do what Calacanis called a power buy? Did you like that?
Yeah, that was awesome.
Talking about how the AOL acquisition of Weblogs Inc. was a power buy because the day before they were acquired by AOL, they had, they had a million readers. And the day after the AOL acquisition, because of all the hype and the press and the links from the AOL sites, they had 2 million readers. So it kind of paid for itself from an AOL perspective. doubled readership, doubled revenues, everything sort of overnight.
All that happens is the trend is that, these first 300,000 customers are easy to acquire. Actually, that's probably an overstatement, easy in the sense of, what it takes to build a business with millions of customers. Then your cost of acquiring each customer after that just becomes more difficult and difficult over time, depending on the markets and so forth. So that's what it really is that, the early adopter community tries things out, so you've got their attention, which you've got to make the most of, to sort of grab and, make them stick to your service. After that, so you're talking about real marketing models, marketing campaigns, cost of customer acquisition and so forth, to get everybody else.
It also gets, I mean, if you apply it to podcasting or video, etc., this is also the Bermuda Triangle between indie and professional as well. And look, professional do an awful job, etc., but, you know, the Ricky Gervais podcast, I hate to think how few people have actually paid for it. I haven't heard any stats, but I mean, that done 4 or 5 million downloads by episode 8 with no marketing. So, I mean, yeah, the reality is sometimes if you build it, they will come, but sometimes they might not.
Yeah, you need to get onto one of those really cool sites like TechCrunch.
and have your servers crash.
All right.
Probably my inheritance. So, yeah.
Enough of the blatant promotion there. All right, look, guys, we've been rambling on here for about an hour, and not that I mind, but, you know, it's probably time that we should start to wrap it up. Final thoughts from you, Nick Kubrilovich.
Final thoughts is that I'm looking forward to building up a community around Web 2.0 and entrepreneurship in Australia with 2Web, and hopefully making a lot more people aware of what 2Web is and accelerating the process of awareness in Australia, because we need to catch up.
Very nice. Benny, final thoughts?
Yeah, the 2Web crew in full effect. If you've seen the 8 Mile Eminem movie, basically just apply that to Australia and think about some technology like blogging and podcasting and RSS. And if you're a PHP programmer, we really need someone in Melbourne like starting tomorrow.
The only thing I remember about that Eminem movie was when he was stooping his girlfriend up against the
Brittany
wall.
Murphy.
Brittany Murphy, yeah, she's hot, man.
Yeah, we don't have one of those in our 2Web group, so.
All right, guys. Well, listen, I'd like to do one of these 2Web crew casts, like, once a month or something, we should say.
Hey, yeah, at least once a fortnight even.
You just renamed it to 2Web crew.
it's 2Web crew, man. That's what it is.
Well, that's what the podcast is. It's the 2Web crew, yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay, I'm fine with that.
Okay. Nick will get his lawyers in Silicon Valley to look at that.
Yeah, sure.
We're after you.
That's getting edited out, I swear to God.
Come speak to me, get on a plane. I'm ready, 2Web crew in full effect.
You can't talk about my funding process. I'm not telling you anything.
You've closed your round, mate, that's fine.
It pops up in podcasts. It's not good. There's a good.
It's all about transparency. Web 2 is about transparency. Being open, you know.
Yeah.
Disclosing everything. Sharing it. Open source, baby.
It's sort of the financial aspects of it. You can't.
You still can't
disclose. I mean, we're still in the midst of a deal and all that sort of stuff.
So. Nick, I think you've got to write a post for TechCrunch, mate. There was a new company that just got started an hour ago.
Somebody just had an idea. I better post about it.
if I don't hang up now, you guys are going to be going at this all night. I know we're going to be...
The real reason 2Web was set up so Nick and I can just bullshit to each other and everyone else just gets CC'd on it.
I noticed that. You've already... Like, I had 50% of my Google, my Gmail, you know, account left before we started this thing. You guys have already pretty much filled it up.
Yeah. Quotas are going to have to be increased. We're going to have to move to dedicated servers just for the mailing list.
I know this conversation is going to continue all night on the Skype IM back channel, but one last thing before we go. What?
Oh, is this still live podcasting? Is it okay?
Yeah.
No, man. Come, I'm ready. I'm ready. Come on.
What is the criterion for people to join the 2Web crew?
Well, we're not
Web 2
sure.
entrepreneurs who blog, that's it. Web 2.0 entrepreneurs in Australia who blog, that at the moment, or podcast.
Do they have to be full-time?
Ideally, yeah.
Yeah, you can't
I mean,
be,
a lot of people run hobby businesses, yeah. As long as your primary income has to be from the Web 2.0 business. Now, if you're getting the dole and that's more than your Web 2 business is coming in, that's okay. But basically, you've got to be running a business in this space. You've got to have, as I say, you've got to have blood, sweat and tears in the game. And ideally, you've got to get your voice out there through blogging, podcasting or damn graffiti with the 2Web crew.
Yeah, and you'll need to provide tax returns and blood samples.
Or PayPal accounts.
No, no semen samples? I heard that Ben was contributing semen samples. Was that voluntarily?
No, it's just something that he got you to do so you could watch.
And with that...
Don't talk about my Apple computers like that.
With that vision in everybody's mind, I'm going to press the stop button. Thank you, boys.
Cheers.
Later.
Interesting stories about travel-related people, products, places, and ideas. The TPN Travel Show, travel.podcastnetwork.com. Take the first step on your next travel experience.
The Podcast Network, real power can't be given.
It must be taken.